A student that's not engaged, that's sitting with their arms crossed and their head down and their cell phone out and whatever, they probably don't know how much you care. If they knew how much you cared, then they're ready to listen.
This is the Transform Your Teaching Podcast. The Transform Your Teaching Podcast is a service of the Center for Teaching and Learning at Cedarville University in Cedarville, Ohio.
Welcome back to Transform Your Teaching here on the campus of Cedarville University. My name is Jared Piles, and with me is Dr. Rob McDowell. We are doing one of our faculty conversations that we have every now and then, and we have a very distinguished guest with us today. Rob, why don't you introduce our distinguished guest?
Well,
I'll give you the privilege and honor.
I appreciate that. Someone I admire very much who's been, I would say, kind of the seed to some of my thoughts, especially when it comes to servant teaching, is General Reno. Now, I'm sure I did not say your full title properly, so, sir, I'm welcome to be corrected by you.
Okay, let's use Lauren Reno.
Okay. So
your first name is not General. I need to make sure.
I'm gonna have a hard time with that.
I gotta fix my notes here. Gotta fix that real quick.
For our audience, he is a retired 3-star general from the Air Force, correct?
Yes.
And when you were a general, you were in charge of logistics.
I did a little of that, yes.
You
sir.
Did. Would it be too far afield to ask exactly what theaters that you operated in, what oversight you had that our listeners would understand?
Basically from the Mississippi to Mississippi River to India, and then from India back around the other way to the Mississippi River.
Hold on, I gotta get a globe.
Wait a minute. I'm gonna have a hard time tracking this in my head. Because it seems like what he's saying is he had, in terms of logistics for the Air Force, the entire globe.
Correct. Yeah. It seems that way.
would that be accurate, sir?
I wouldn't overstate my part. I had the pleasure of working with a lot of great people who had a lot of savvy and good attention to detail and were willing to serve and lead. Hmm. And it was a pleasure to work with them.
Well, we are honored to have you here today.
Thank you
for taking the time. And just take some time, tell us how you got to Cedarville, and we'll move into the servant teaching.
I grew up at Cedarville, actually, in the town. I moved here when I was 5. My dad was on the faculty at the fledgling Baptist-run Cedarville College in the early 50s. And so my home was over on Bridge Street, and I grew up here and went to public school. And then I came to the college in the fall of 66 and graduated in 70 and taught school for 3 years nearby, public school, and then joined the Air Force. And after 38 years on active duty, Cedarville asked me to come back, and I have been here since 2012.
Wow. So a townie. We actually have what?
I am a townie.
You're a townie.
Cedarville University folks referred to as a townie. That's amazing.
What did you teach when you taught high school?
I taught 8th grade science and 7th grade spelling for 2 years. And then I taught at the high school general science and biology. Mm. And I coached basketball and football.
Wow. So busy.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed working with the young people then as I do now.
Sure. That's great.
Wow.
So tell us a little bit. We like to ask these, when we have these faculty conversations, we like to ask our guests your philosophy of teaching. So what is your overall, how do you approach the teaching itself?
So Jared, I'm just getting to know you, but that sounds like a Dr. Rob question.
And you have no idea, sir.
You use big words like philosophy. I'm not sure what all you want me to say. I will tell you that my philosophy of education is similar to my philosophy of leadership. There are so many elements to both. Ones that cross over this intersection of the Venn diagram of the two, if you will, would be serving well I think a leader and a faculty member at whatever level need to serve well. I would say that seeking to serve is even better than serving. Mm. So being more in tune with the needs of the students than the imperative of my agenda in education as in leading is important to me. And third, that more gets done by inspiring than by ordering. Now, that takes some people by surprise. Having served in the military, the assumption of most civilians is, well, you just give an order and stuff happens. I would say less than 5% of the time was that the case. 95%+ it was influencing and inspiring and cajoling and convincing people to do things in leadership. And thus it is in education. You can't just give an assignment and test on it. You will get some good outcomes, but there is way more that you're leaving on the table by not doing the harder work of inspiring. So in education, it's serving the students' needs well. I think it's modeling seeking to serve while teaching, because someone who said more is caught than taught, there's a lot of truth to that in my thinking. And so particularly in my leadership class, I want to model good leading because I think that will resonate with them. And then finally, getting them to believe in the messenger and then the message. They're more apt to embrace and apply the message if they really identify with the person that's delivering it. So, summary, my philosophy of education is pretty closely aligned to my philosophy of leadership.
So I think a byproduct of that is when you are inspiring, you're also stoking the fire of intrinsic motivation for your students and your followers as well.
You said that better than I did.
Actually, Ryan said it in Discord, so I took it from him. But I think that's a natural byproduct of that. I mean, the old adage is, you know, those who can't do, teach. But when you come to a class like a leadership class, you really do have to be that exemplar for the students to see of a good leader.
Yes, sir. I think there is greater value from the student's perspective from someone who has been there, done that, than someone that has read a lot of books and can articulate some theories. They want to know that this stuff really works before they are wanting to embrace it.
Yeah.
One of the things that you said was that you pay more attention to the needs of the student. So how do you go about evaluating student needs?
I think it's by, if I were just to say one thing, it's listening well. And what that means, listening well, is listening to them in class. It's so my class starts at 8:30 on Mondays and Wednesdays, and some of the students, some of the time. This is a podcast, so you can't see the big smiles all around. Some of the students, some of the time, find that quite early in their day. And so listening includes reading their body language, how they carry themselves, to what extent they're engaged or not. And it's also listening to their words, to the questions they ask. Sometimes the question asked is not the question that they have. And it's answering what they want, what they need, more than just if they ask you what's 2 and 2, well, the answer is obviously 4. But the real question is they're thinking about numbers or math. And why are they thinking about that? And where can I take that?
I know that's one of the challenges I think our faculty face on a daily basis, especially when you have so many students that you're dealing with. You know, just the practice of listening.
Yeah, so it is more than just listening in the class. I find that better things happen in the class if I have had a chance to listen to them out of the class. I had a student come to my office yesterday with some concerns refreshingly, not about his grades, not about quibbling over a question or the way a paper was marked, but life questions and stresses and decisions that the student is facing. And because of that exchange yesterday in my office, the exchange in class today was all different with that student. Mm. And so listening is more than just listening what goes on in the class, though it certainly is that, but it's listening to their needs out of class. In my syllabus, I list my cell number and the hours they can expect me to answer. So texting, cell phone calls in the evening. If I can take 5 minutes and save them an hour of struggling over the mechanics of an assignment that maybe I didn't word as well as I should have or could have, I'd do it all day long. And so it's listening in class, certainly, but out of class too.
So listening, what other specific characteristics are there of a servant teacher?
Yeah, listening is well up on that list. I think modeling is too. I really think teachers, faculty, we really need to model more than just deliver content. A lot of content is not the word spoken as much as the lives lived. And so what do I mean by model? Affirmation can be modeled. Now, the students need affirmation, but come on, they're in their young 20s. They're not old guys like us sitting around the table here, and they don't have the experience, and some not the exposure in how do you affirm others. And so I need to get it right. When I affirm them or one of their classmates, I need to do it in a way that's worthy of them emulating. Mm-hmm. So I think modeling affirmation, not just for the affirmation's sake, but to equip them to do it when they leave. I would say high standards, modeling high standards. When I make a mistake, when I am not as thorough in an assignment, when the syllabus has an error, when there's a scheduling problem, when I can't get the tech cart to work, being honest, modeling high standards, modeling transparency. So early on this semester, I was having trouble with the tech cart, and there's a student that sits two over on my left, right in the front of the room, and he's always 10 or 15 minutes early, and he's a tech whiz. And so I asked him if he would, when he came to class early, if he'd just help me get the tech cart up and running. Well, he's a whiz at it. He can do it so fast. He does it right every time. It takes a burden off me, but it shows him that I have the confidence in him to do that. So I think setting the high standards is really important and something that needs to be modeled. Mistake acknowledgement needs to be modeled. I certainly should express to the class when I make a mistake. I should not be proud, boastful, thinking or wanting them to think that I'm perfect because I'm not. So modeling the acknowledgement of mistakes is more apt to help them learn that skill in life, not just the three main points of the objectives that we're teaching in class today. It's letting them see me outside the classroom. Mm. I am more than a professor. Mm. Lauren Reno is a complex person. He has a lot of interests, and let them see me out of the classroom will help them in the classroom to take more away. For me, praying for out-of-class leaders in class. So we start class with prayer every day. And if I don't have a student leading and I'm the one that's leading in prayer, I will always pray for Dr. White, the president of the university. Not just because I want to pray for Dr. White and ask God's blessing on him to give him wisdom from above, effectiveness in his relationships, wisdom for decisions. I want them to see me praying for my leaders, because a big part of my philosophy of education is modeling, and I want them to see that praying for their leaders should be something that they do. Mm. Giving feedback candidly and privately and publicly when appropriate, if they do something great, acknowledging them in front of the whole class. So that's what I'm talking about, modeling. It's not just teaching the content. It's how I do it in a way that and no surprise, they remember what they see even more than they remember what they heard.
So we have, just to recap, listening, modeling. I think I heard in there as well, attention to encouragement. So when you give feedback, and it's, let's say it's, it seems like you even think of it as constructive. You don't necessarily think of it as negative feedback as much as you maybe see it as an opportunity for the student to improve.
Sure. I'll give you an example, Rob. 5% of the grade for our students is their participation in class every day. And so after class every day, in my grade book, I score them on a scale of 0 to 5, the quantity and quality of their contributions to class. And they know that I'm doing this. And so I am apt to tell one student after he makes a particularly insightful comment or question, I'll just look at him and say, that was a 5.
That's great.
And everyone else in the class is thinking, oh man, I wish you'd say that to me. And so now it's progressed with someone would make a comment and I would turn back to the person that started all of this and pointing to one person, but looking at another, I would say, that wasn't a 5. And everyone in the class knows they need to pick up the game a little bit on the quality of their comments. And so it's a way to set someone apart. They feel really good when they hear they're getting the max score. And someone else will think, oh, I could have said that a little better or a little more concisely or a little more depth of thought or with a little more relationship to what we're talking about. So that's a small way. It doesn't take but a second to say, that was a 5. And they all know what that means. I mean, there's 5 minutes that could go with that. But when I say that's a 5, that's good.
Their goal is to be a 5.
I'm going to be a 5 today.
I'm going to be a 5 today.
So which one of our questions has been a 5?
So I would just say this.
Oh, no.
Jared, your performance so far.
Yeah.
Has been a 5.
Oh, look
how
at
you
that.
Doing, Rob?
No, I should look at him and say that was not a 5.
Not a 5. That was not a 5.
I'm taking that with me. That's a good one. So feedback, modeling, they all have a kind of a root, if I can. And you mentioned it a little bit earlier on humility. How do you approach your leadership class or teaching in general, or as a leader? How does humility play a role in that?
So we're at Cedarville, we're supposed to biblically integrate our classes. And I'll tell you, it's probably a challenge in some classes. It is not in mine. Mm. I think the Bible from cover to cover, someone said from Genesis to the maps, it talks about leadership. There's a verse in James, I think it's chapter 4 and verse 10. It says, humble yourself in the sight of the Lord and he will lift you up. So it's humble yourself. Don't wait to be humbled. Don't have someone else do it. Humble yourself. It says, in the sight of the Lord. You don't humble yourself in your own opinion or to make others think you're a pretty good guy. It's not humble yourself in the sight of others. It's humble yourself at the highest level, God's standard, and then he will lift you up. And man, if someone's going to be lifting, I want God to be lifting, not someone else, because he can lift me higher. So I think humility is an essential part of leadership, like I think it's an essential part of education. You're right, Jared. Listening is being humble. It's humble enough to know that what that guy is about to say may be even better than what I was going to say. And so I'm keeping my mouth shut, and I'm going to just listen.
I feel like we just should sit here.
And listen.
Keep our mouth
shut. No.
That doesn't bode well for a podcast.
No. Yeah, we're supposed to talk. Imagine 2 minutes of nothing.
That would be a nod cast.
That was excellent.
We're going to have to use that too. Appreciate that.
I think that's going to have to be the little phrase that we have at the front.
The nod cast?
The nod cast. That would be a nod cast.
Along with humility, though. I mean, humility, it can't, like you mentioned, being willing to humble yourself when situations arise where there are mistakes, or, you know, the, you know, a teacher may be more apt to excuse away their mistakes. Oh, no, I meant to do that. No, that's what your homework was supposed to be. And instead of taking the approach of humility. So what other barriers do you see to being a servant teacher?
You know, when I boil down all the barriers, it really comes down to pride. Mm. I'm not willing to admit. So an example is we use Canvas as the learning management system. And if I, so I have 17 students in my class. If two students query me about the mechanics of an assignment, I conclude that I didn't make it as clear as I should. Mm. And I go right to the announcements and clear it up. And if possible, in clarifying what the assignment is, I will mention one or two students' names. Kyle brought to my attention that I didn't specify this or tell you where to get that. Thank you, Kyle. For the rest of you, this is where you find it. And so I'm giving him positive feedback. And I'm clarifying for the others. And again, Jared, it's back to modeling. The way I'm going to admit the mistake needs to be in a way that they would be willing to say, okay, when I make mistakes, not if, I'm going to do it the way he did. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to admit it, be open, give credit, and we can move on. So I see the barrier of pride. I think a self-focus instead of a student focus. Doing, being seen rather than serving. You know, it's interesting in Matthew 6, first four verses, it talks about doing alms. And it says, if you do your alms to be seen of men, you have your reward. But when you do your alms, do them in secret. And the Lord, which sees in secret, will reward you openly. That same concept of secret versus to have men's praise, the Lord on the Sermon on the Mount talks about doing alms, he talks about prayer, and he talks about fasting. All three of those, same way. Three times, okay, one, maybe I missed it. Two, I should have been listening better. Three, it's the 2x4 on the head. Pay attention, Reno, there are three times here, so that needs to be something you do. And so doing it to be seen of men should not be the focus. So it shouldn't be about me, it should be about them. And finally, I think, and this one's more subtle, maybe insidious, it's a general insecurity. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to be over secure. We don't want to be secure in ourselves and not in the Lord. But an insecurity sometimes will cause us to say or do things or do them in a way that masks our failure. So I think those are barriers. As far as strategies, I would say try new things. I would say laugh at your own mistakes. You don't have to cover them up. Laugh at them. They'll laugh along with you. And I think a third strategy is let students help, like the tech cart. The student that helps me is so faithful, and I think he comes to class, comes right up to the front, but he feels like class starting is partly his doing. It's not all about me. And I love it. I mean, I benefit from it, but I love that I can pull him in to what I'm trying to do.
That's great.
Well, one of the things that we do is we ask those that we interview if they could give us some homework or give the listener some homework. And I think in this particular instance, it would be very appropriate as well for you to have a message of encouragement for, you know, specifically our faculty, but not just ours. Any teacher, because we have teachers that are K-12 that listen to us, and we have higher ed folks that listen to us. We even have industry people who aren't necessarily teaching that are listening. So what would you tell them?
Okay, Rob, I'll answer that. But Jared, I would just tell you on the side.
Okay, Rob, don't listen.
I'm not listening.
That was only a 3.5.
I'm writing that down.
And that's only a 3.5 because giving homework to others presumes that I know where all of them are and where they all want to go.
He's pedagoging you right now.
He's had this question for a while.
So I, I'm reluctant to presume. But I'll just tell you some things I would think about to do before coming to class and in class, a couple things. One, I would say praying for the students will get one's heart in the right place to serve them. And so it not only helps you to learn their names, you pray around the room because students are creatures of habit, and wherever they sit on day one is where they end up sitting the whole semester. But praying for them by name, and as their needs come to the fore, praying for those needs. And it helps me be in a place to serve them before the throne of grace, as I want to when I'm in class. Yes, I have an agenda and a syllabus, and we have learning objectives and all of those things. But I want to serve them well. And for me, praying for them by name regularly really helps me get in the right place to serve them. And the second thing I'd mention, and again, I'm sorry, I don't know who said this first, but someone applying it to a leadership relationship, and I apply it to students, is that students don't care how much we know until they know how much we care. It's true in leadership. I think it's true in the classroom. The student that's not engaged, that's sitting with their arms crossed and their head down and their cell phone out and whatever, they probably don't know how much you care. If they knew how much you cared, then they're ready to listen. And so making sure that students know how much I care, not just convincing them of that to bring me any credit, but it's the key, I think, that unlocks the door to accept and receive what I'm trying to teach and what I'm trying to model.
Take that with you.
Yeah.
Mr. 3.5.
I will.
Boom. Well, we definitely appreciate your time today and sharing your insights on servant teaching and servant leadership. It's been a privilege.
Thank you.
To hear from you.
It's been a five.
It's been a five.
Overall, it's been a five. So it averages out. Man. If you're doing a group project.
I'm feeling good.
I pulled my weight.
He's letting me go out on the high.
There you go. That's going to do it for us on this episode of Transform Your Teaching. Be sure you like and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Check out our blog at cedarville.edu/focusblog. And if you have any questions, send us an email at ctlpodcast@cedarville.edu. Thanks for listening.